When I first started to do this exhibition, I wanted to focus on new additions to the collection over the last 5 years, and when I counted, I was astounded to find that the collection grew by more than 9,000 works of art in just the past 5 years.
Okay, so let's talk about this exhibition. How did it come to be?
It came to be because we wanted to celebrate the gifts and the new works of art that have entered the collection in the last 5 years. Also, it's time to coincide with the launch of a group that we're calling the Anne Darnancourt Society, named after our late director. And it's a group that the museum has formed specifically to celebrate donors of works of art. Museums live for their collections, and we wouldn't be able to build the collection given the cost of buying works of art of great quality now unless we had really great donors. So some people give us works of art, others give us funds to acquire works of art, and they're really the lifeblood of any collecting institution.
This exhibition, it's called First Look Collecting for Philadelphia.
It's called First Look because many of the objects in the exhibition haven't been out on view yet. And I should say that the exhibition really has two related parts. One is the exhibition in the Dorrance Gallery, but we can only show about 125 of the nearly 9,000 new acquisitions. So it's admittedly a very small selection. The other part of the exhibition is that we've gone through all of our permanent collection galleries and we've put special first look labels on anything that was acquired in the last 5 years so that people can see what a difference a particular object makes in our normal displays. And so as they wander the museum, they'll be able to say, oh, this horse armor, for instance, which is the centerpiece of our armor gallery now, was acquired within the last 5 years, and look at what a difference it makes to this display.
That's really interesting. How many objects have labels?
Several hundred throughout the museum.
And will those labels stay up?
They'll stay up through the duration of the exhibition, but then we'll take them down.
This exhibition celebrates the dynamic nature of the collection. Does it tell a story, and how did you organize it, and how did you make those selections?
Well, it was really difficult to make such a small selection of objects. As I said, only about 125 out of 9,000. So I decided to organize the exhibition by kind of universal themes in art. So there's a whole section of portraits, for instance, and that section includes photographs, it includes video, it includes paintings, and there are portraits from different parts of the world. So I think it'll be fun for visitors because it will show people that there's a different kind of way to look at art. Our permanent galleries are more or less arranged by chronology and geography, and this will be a really kind of exciting mix of things that'll encourage visitors to make different kinds of connections between works of art that may not immediately appear to be related.
Can you give examples?
Yes, for instance, there's a painting by Grant Wood, a beautiful landscape of farm fields where your eye is really drawn to the geometry of the fields. And I've installed right below it a photograph that Paul Strand took of a meadow in Italy. The grass is mown in one part. And I just love the way both of these artists, working in completely different mediums and at different times, kind of had this same idea in their head.
Can you give an example of the range of works?
The earliest work in the exhibition is a Japanese ceramic piece made in the 6th century. And the most recent work is a watercolor by the painter and naturalist named James Prosek. I think it was made in 2012.
And so what does that variety illustrate when you come into an exhibition and you see, it must be really hard to figure out there are probably so many stories you could tell with this eclectic mix. What story are you telling?
I'm mostly telling a story about the breadth and depth of the museum's collection, but I also want to tell the story of artists creating works of art in different kinds of media, in different places, across time, but lots of them are thinking about the same thing. They're thinking about, how do I depict a landscape, or how do I draw this line so that it does exactly what I want it to do? So those are the kinds of connections I hope visitors will be thinking about as they walk through the gallery.
Are there any interesting stories about how any of these works were acquired?
There's a little chalk drawing of a 15-year-old Russian girl, for instance, by an artist not very well known named Karl Hagedorn. He was a German artist who fought for the Germans, and he was on the Russian front. And he made this whole series of drawings of people and peasants and other soldiers while he was on the front. And he saved all of these drawings, and he gave them to a medical officer when the officer left the front. And this officer saved them, and the artist retrieved them, and then later on moved to Philadelphia. And our curator of prints, John Ittman, went to visit this artist and saw these drawings and thought it was really important to keep them together. And so he actually bought them himself and donated them to the museum in memory of Ann Darnincourt, who would have loved them. It's hanging right next to a charcoal and pastel by the artist Sidney Goodman. He was a very distinguished and well-known Philadelphia artist who passed away just this past year. And that painting was donated to the museum by Frank and Betsy Goodyear. Frank Goodyear, for many years, was the director of the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts. One of the highlights of the exhibition is a portrait of Yarrow Mammoet by Charles Wilson Peale. This painting had been in the collection of the Philadelphia History Museum, which decided to deaccession and sell the painting. And our museum was able, fortunately, to raise the funds to acquire it. It's one of the earliest known depictions of an African-American man, very, very sympathetically painted. And Peale hung this portrait of this humble African-American man in the same gallery as portraits of Benjamin Franklin and George Washington. You'll see in the exhibition 6 or 8 photographs by the artist Paul Strand. The museum's planning a retrospective of Paul Strand's work in the future, so this is just a little snapshot of our holdings. But we recently acquired the entire Paul Strand archive, and now our museum is the repository of works by Paul Strand. We have over 4,000 photographs by this artist, who really was one of the pioneers of modernism and photography.
You're bringing up an interesting point, and that is that you have, how many objects total, did you say?
More than 230,000.
Okay, so you have 230,000. How many are on display at any one time?
That's a hard question to answer. We're always changing things out, and as I said, the largest part of the collection is works on paper. We have 150,000 works on paper, prints, drawings, and photographs. And as I said before, these can only be displayed for very short periods of time.
Can you talk about the importance of continuing to collect?
I hope that when visitors walk through the galleries and see the special labels that I told you about, that it will become obvious to them why museums continue to collect. Because, as I said, a collection is always evolving, tastes change, collecting interests change, and we like to rotate our galleries very frequently so that every display is not static. I think a museum becomes a dead institution if it stops collecting and stops changing.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.